It's time for JT the Brick.
Football season is finally here.
Old-fashioned, hard-nosed football.
JT, how about that performance last night? We haven't seen that team look like that in forever.
Put the team first and played their ass off on Sunday.
The cream of the crop.
This is the place to come for Raiders.
We're getting the Raiders. We're getting this iconic brand. And I hope this city embraces it. I think they will.
Come to the Raiders and become infamous.
JT the Brick.
The Oakland Raiders select Josh Jacobs.
Under center, here comes Jacobs. Jumps, dives over the top, touchdown! Touchdown, Raiders!
Josh Jacobs is a beast running up the middle.
I want to see more of that this year.
Raiders upset the Colts.
Believe me, the effort, the concentration, the details were there tonight. It gives us something to really build on.
And I'm just sick of losing.
This offense is going to be tough to stop.
You know, I got a real good feeling about all these players.
Raider Nation, unite!
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT, great to have you. Big, big, big show. Wow. Woke up today, Bobby put this together along with Kyle, our program director, the Vegas Golden Knights. We have the owner, Bill Foley, at the bottom of the hour. Looking forward to that. On the Vegas Golden Knights, contribution with players and the team of $500,000 to assist Vegas Golden Knight part-time game day employees and arena hourly on-call staff. Mr. Foley, the owner, at the bottom of the hour, thrilled to have the opportunity to interview him and talk to him. Brian Billick, a former Super Bowl head coach, will join us here in about 15 minutes from NFL Network. He's going to be great. From your Vegas Golden Knights, Nick Holden will join us at 5:05 to kick off that hour. And the great NFL insider from the Bay Area, Scott Baer, who's as good as anybody with the Raiders, he'll join us to go over what I think is an outstanding, outstanding offseason for the Raiders in free agency. I've been known to say that over the years because I get hyped up for free agency. You see teams that need players, they get a couple of players, you want to throw a party. The reason I like it this time is Mike Mayock working with John Gruden. Reggie McKenzie did good jobs over the years, but I like this combination of Gruden and Mayock together, evaluating all of this talent and trying to help out the defense first. Marcus Mariota as a backup quarterback who might be able to push Derek Carr, and Jason Witten, an elite future Hall of Famer tight end on the offensive side, and then they just load it up on defense. So here we go. We want to thank our partners at PT's 64 in the state. They will be back bigger than ever. They fuel the monologue. When you go to PT's, I'll continue to talk about the best happy hour in town. A lot of displaced bartenders, food servers, chefs, people behind the scenes. They're our proud partner, and we always talk about Golden Entertainment. They own the Strat, Arizona Charlie's, and they are grinding through what we all are grinding through here as people are ready to get back to work. I want to get to the end of this week. This has been a really rough week for a lot of people out there, and we want to thank you for listening. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to have conversations, and they're going to be in-depth. And we're going to be talking about the Vegas community. Adam Joseph will join us tomorrow about Opportunity Village. I'll be talking with the Raider Foundation. We have an interview with Mr. Foley coming up in 30 minutes on what the Golden Knights Foundation does. So we'd like to help you out. And we'd like to do more with the charities here in town. So if we can help out in any way, you know where to find me at 876-1340. If we can help in any way, I will do whatever I can to help you and get your word out at 876-1340. This community needs to come together. My phone rings every day with people who say the same thing. What's going on in Vegas? And I tell them the same thing that's going on with you. We don't need any special attention. We're no different than Charlotte, New York, Detroit, Seattle, San Francisco, Austin, Texas. We're all in this together as a country. All the coronavirus cancellations affects everybody, and we're going to handle it our way. All we can do is take care of our own, take care of this community, and do a pretty good job of supporting each other. And this should be your getaway, your ability to talk sports in one of the busiest weeks I've ever had in the offseason. It's one of the busiest because of Tom Brady. Now, there are three big NFL stories we need to get to. Three big ones in no particular order. I'll start off first with Sean Payton, the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, has tested positive for the coronavirus. He's okay. He's been tweeting out on social media. He's been to a horse track in Arkansas. He was at the team facility. He's been traveling a little bit. Where did he pick it up? No one knows. He's 56. He is the first person in the NFL world known to have tested positive for the virus. Sean Payton will forever be connected with this NFL shutdown and the virus as the first to test positive. But we all know without enough testing and without every player showing up, because players now, players can't travel. They can't go to their facility. They're not allowed to go to their facility. And we're seeing players now that can't even get their physicals as they're trying to do that from independent doctors to clear and be able to get this money and sign with new teams. So Sean Payton tested positive. He said he didn't feel well this past Sunday, took the test Monday, and received the results Thursday afternoon a couple of hours ago. He's resting at home fatigued, but he's part of the 20% of cases that have no fever and no cough, which is really important on this. So that's one story with Sean Payton. I know a couple of people in town who are really tight with him, agents and former players. Sean Payton, we're thinking about him as we begin the show. Second point is Tom Brady. As I told you yesterday exclusively on the Las Vegas Sports Network, I talked to someone in the Buccaneers organization who said that they are serious about the Brady physical. It's not going to end the deal, but Tom Brady in New York had to go to an independent doctor. He had his physical this morning, according to Adam Schefter, and that physical, the results will come out. The reason why there's been no press conference and Tampa Bay is not shooting off confetti cannons is because they care about this physical, because they won't tell you this, but they don't trust the Patriots and their medical. And no one should, because the Patriots have been hiding their medical on game day and their medicals heading into games forever. What about Brady's shoulder? What about his elbow? How does he look? He probably looks great. He was just on a vacation in Costa Rica running on the beach with his beautiful wife. I don't think that's anything that's going to slow down this deal. But remember, that's why we have nothing to announce. Nothing to announce on Brady because the physical, which happened today. So just keep an eye on Tom Brady's Instagram or Twitter if you follow it. He will break the story first. And finally, the last big story is Todd Gurley was released today by the Rams in what is a cost-cutting move. He made a ton of money, $45 million guaranteed when he signed his extension in 2018. Think about that money. A really important point I want to make here. He doesn't care. He tweeted out an emoji, a laughing crying emoji, because he got all his guaranteed money. He's paid. So now he's damaged goods. He's not the player that he used to be. And he'll probably take a discounted deal and go to the Buccaneers or go to another team. He could go to the Patriots or whatever. He's probably going to be able to get back to being close to 100%, but he's not the player that he once was. And all the money that he cashed on that contract when he did it has been paid. It's called guaranteed money. So I've been telling you this for a long time. Don't look at the contract. He signed Ryan Tannehill, 4 years, 120, no, no, $66 million of it's guaranteed. Kirk Cousins, guaranteed money. Whenever you talk about guaranteed money. So Todd Gurley got paid. He's not crying. He's not upset. He's going to go on and make a ton of money somewhere else, but he won't make the money he's used to. And nor should he, because he just got $45 million in guaranteed money, and he didn't play. He's been damaged goods, so he'll be fine. Also, the Broncos released Joe Flacco after one season. That's a pretty bad look for Denver. I mean, they brought Flacco in there, not to be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, but he was supposed to be decent for a while. He was supposed to be pretty good for a while, and Joe Flacco will be a backup quarterback somewhere else. I will go this far to say this. Joe Flacco will be the best backup quarterback in football, even with Marcus Mariota. Flacco's got a Super Bowl, one of the greatest postseasons of all time. He's still young enough. He'll be a great backup quarterback. So that's what you need with your NFL update. The Raiders, I'd like to hear from you. I'd like you to check in with us after Bill Foley calls in at the bottom of the hour, the owner of your Vegas Golden Knights. And let's get a conversation going about the community here and what VGK is doing, as they're the only professional team to play here as the Raiders are coming to town. And I always talk about the Raider Foundation and how, the work they're doing. I mean, they're 24/7 just like VGK. Bill Foley coming up in about 20 minutes. Brian Billick will join us next from NFL Network. We'll talk to the coach. He has a lot to say. Coming up on Tom Brady, I'll ask him all about the Brady move. We're brought to you by Sam and Ash, samandash.com.
put in a lot of time and effort and consultation to determine what's the best route to go. And we felt just for the health and safety reasons, it was just best now to turn it off.
Mark Davis, owner of the Silver and Black, and he's on top of everything that's happening at the stadium with the organization, the relocation to Vegas. Vince Appienza talked to him. It's a pleasure to be joined by Brian Billick, the Super Bowl-winning coach of the Ravens, now with NFL Network. And, Coach, first off, thanks for doing this on a busy day. I saw you earlier on NFL Network with your grandson. We can wish him happy birthday.
Yeah, it was great to have him on. He knows a whole lot more than I do. He follows this stuff pretty good, so it was It is his eighth birthday. It was great to have him on.
That was a lot of fun. Coach, you did the deep dive on Brady to Tampa Bay because of the organizational structure at the quarterback position. You seem to like that setup as Brady goes to Tampa and how that offense will be loaded.
Well, it's going to be interesting. Obviously, when you're talking about Bruce Arians, and I also mentioned Tom Moore, who, if there's a Hall of Fame for assistant coaches, Tom Moore would be there. He's been there, you know, in the league forever. Was part of the evolution of Peyton Manning. So it's going to be very interesting to see Tom Brady, Bruce Arians, Tom Moore, Clyde Christensen, the quarterback coach, how they kind of mold this thing together, because obviously it's going to be a mixture of what Brady wants to do, what he's comfortable with, and what Bruce Arians has tried to put together there at Tampa Bay.
Do you see a big difference? Because the ball comes out, Coach, so quick with Brady through the New England years. Do you expect the same thing? The ball comes out quickly to big receivers, or are those receivers going to have time to get downfield so Brady can still go over the top?
Well, Brady, obviously, it's a little bit different than he's had. And certainly the efficiency of Tom Brady and the small ball that he likes to play to get the ball out of his hands. But I imagine they'll mold in the big play offense down the field. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, can Brady still throw the deep ball? Well, sure he can, because the deep ball is not a function of arm strength. It's a function of touch and timing. And certainly Tom Brady still has the touch and the timing. And, you know, compared to last year, he has guys to go down the field too. Some big receivers, some speed receivers down the field. So, you know, he threw the ball better than 600 times last year. Jameis Winston did as well, threw for better than 5,000 yards. You know, I can see 30 touchdowns out of Tom Brady, just like Jameis Winston. What you hope you don't see is the 30 interceptions that Jameis Winston had. You don't expect that out of Tom Brady.
Brian Billick's our guest. Coach, I'm fascinated. We've talked in the past about your relationship with the late, great Bill Walsh. And when you look at the end of a career for a quarterback who still has time left, Joe Montana to Kansas City, Tom Brady to Tampa, what can you bring back when it goes to your vast knowledge about how difficult those decisions are from ownership, GM, through the head coach, when you got to pull the trigger on a move like that?
Well, it's very difficult because there is an emotional attachment. When you've had the success that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots have had, you can't just say, well, hey, it's just time to move on. But from a business standpoint, from an organizational standpoint, that's exactly what you have to do. In this league, you're going to get into trouble if you're paying for past performance versus future expectations. And clearly, they felt like at 42, and who knows how long Tom Brady will play and how effective he's going to be, but at some point it is going to fall off. And they may very well feel like they had to regroup and look to the future of the organization. But I don't know why you couldn't look. You know, Peyton Manning, in his first year in Denver, he was a 580 throw, 68% completion, 4,600 yards, 37 touchdowns. All right, well, Tom Brady last year was better than 600 throws, better than 4,000 yards. And obviously, you know, the big plays, the touchdowns weren't there, although he did have 24 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. You compare that to Jameis Winston, as we said. He had 33 touchdowns, but he had 30 interceptions. So I can't imagine that Tampa Bay and Bruce Arians and the like are thinking, yeah, if we can get a 30 touchdown and high single digit, maybe 12, 13 interception, that we're going to be a better than 7-19.
Super Bowl champion head coach Brian Billick, NFL Network, joins us. Coach, I'm fascinated about how many deals should have been out there for him and it weren't. You can go to the Las Vegas Raiders. They get Mariota with Carr. You can go out to Los Angeles. We don't know if they really put in a big-time deal or not. We're thinking about Vrabel with the Titans in Nashville and other teams. Does that interest you as much? Because he landed in Tampa Bay, but he's the all-time great. Why didn't more teams like Chicago clear the way to try to make a bigger offer for Tom Brady?
Well, and you have to look at a number of teams. I've always been leery of that team that feels like they're one player away, even at the quarterback position, from being a Super Bowl caliber team, because typically you're not. It's more than one player. And you have to look at, okay, where are we realistically at? What can we wrap around him? Particularly with a player like Brady, who you're going to have to kind of pay as you go. You're not going to have to be able to give him one of these long-term contracts where you can amortize the contract over a number of years. You're pretty much kind of paying franchise money, $30, $35 million a year, as you go. And that straps you a little bit from the cap standpoint. Why the other teams didn't pursue it or go further, clearly Tampa Bay felt like they were that one player away with what they're able to have offensively. They're going to get better defensively. You know, I've been asked all day, okay, does this make them a championship-caliber team? I think it makes them a playoff-capable team, but I don't know that this necessarily puts Tampa Bay in the same class as, say, San Francisco, Seattle, Green Bay, Minnesota. You know, we'll see if they can work themselves into that. Certainly they're closer to it with Tom Brady, but they still have a lot to do.
Coach, I'll do some rapid fire before we get to X-Tech shoulder pads. Do you think Phillip Rivers, great fit, because that offensive line was built up for Andrew Luck. He jumps in there quickly with Indianapolis, and they got a really good chance to go deep into the playoffs?
I think they do. I think what they were able to do last year with Jacoby Brissett, certainly Phillip Rivers, and Phillip Rivers, like Tom Brady, there's no reason to think that he can't perform at a high level. A little bit different structure of what they're trying to do. But, yeah, anytime you add a veteran quarterback like Phillip Rivers, he's going to bring that level of expertise that they haven't had that indeed may make the difference for Indianapolis.
We know that Bill Belichick has a plan. Stidham's the backup. He becomes the starter. But are you a believer it could be Jacoby Brissett, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton? Do you think there's a fit for quarterback there so the Patriots can still dominate the AFC East?
Yeah, we're going to find out, aren't we, whether they bring in a veteran quarterback feeling – you know, which would say, no, we still think we're a good enough team to compete for the East and we'll transition. This is new territory for New England. They haven't had to do this for 20 years. They've had to reshuffle, but they always began with Tom Brady. Or are they truly, is this a sign that says, okay, no, we're going to try to pick a quarterback of the future. We're going to take a year or two to restock, to go forward. You know, we're going to find that out over the next few weeks between now and the draft.
And last football question, with Todd Gurley being released, it's a money move. He's not 100%, hasn't been. Can you just talk about what's happened at the running back position and how the prices, Melvin Gordon, guys looking for jobs compared to when you won a Super Bowl as a head coach, you're a former player, when you broke into the league and the importance, coach, of the running back and where the running back stands today?
Yeah, well, it's different, isn't it, because of the structure of the league. It has less to say about whether it's a Gurley or a Gordon than it is how you value a running back. There are very few 300-plus carry guys, whether it's Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, that's just not the way most teams are built with the way the rules are right now. These are going to be, again, players that I don't think anybody that signs these guys thinks they're going to be a 300-plus carry guy, but they can be part of a rotation and still be very effective. But it says more about where we are as a league than their abilities as individual players, as running backs.
When you have X-Tech shoulder pads and you have Von Miller and Khalil Mack on board, Doc, those are two of the greatest defensive players of all time. I mean, Mack's got a long way to go. Miller's proved himself. You're a partner with the company and an investor. How's this working out for you?
Yeah, I'm very proud of the association with X-Tech. You know, we got to take the head out of the game. That's very clear cut. Well, that puts a high priority on pads. And with X-Tech pads, this is the next evolution in pads. Bob Roderick, Teddy Monica put this thing together, a mom-pa organization out of New Jersey that is now the number one pad in the National Football League. And it's replete through college football, whether it's Michigan, Ohio State, Baylor. It goes on and on across the board. It's also now available to high school players. And anybody that has a young player that wants to participate in this game, you need to look at X-Tech Pad as the ultimate in protection for them. In padding, go to xtechpads.com or go on to Instagram at xtechpad.
Nice. Do you have a comment on Sean Payton, your friend, testing positive for the coronavirus?
Yeah, I'm sure Sean's going to be fine. You know, he's in great shape. He's someone that really takes good care of himself. Typical of where we are around the country right now, and I think Sean can be a great example for everybody to say, look, yes, this happens. I'll get through it. And, of course, our thoughts and prayers go out to he and his family.
Thank you, Coach. All the best. Talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
There he is, Brian Billick, Super Bowl champion coach for the Ravens, Super Bowl 35, thanks to X-Tech, and a nice comment there with Sean Payton, which was really the shocking story today. And it broke. There's breaking news every day this week. For football, it's all been good about free agency, but as we're looking back at television and looking at CNN or Fox or MSNBC or the local news that you get here, and there's always information coming up on the virus, when it ties into celebrities, athletes, coaches, it's going to bring out more publicity. More people are going to talk about it and tie it into sports talk radio. And that's what's coming. We saw that with Kevin Durant and Sean Payton in the same week. Initially with Rudy Gobert, right? And Donovan Mitchell. And there's going to be more athletes because the testing is increasing and the numbers are going to increase. And we know that as we try to flatten the curve. And more of us try to talk about that. Every day, I am fascinated by this. When I leave my home, when I go home at night. I mean, I went home at night. I'm not making this up. I saw a liquor store with a line outside. With people in line who are supposed to be social distancing themselves. And they're in line to get essentials. As Bobby said yesterday, yes, liquor and cigarettes. People need their cigs and they need their booze. I get that. But should they wait in a line outside at midnight, which I saw with my own two eyes. I tweeted out about Clearwater Beach. As all these people are on the beach, they finally had to close the beach because of the insanity of people on spring break going, this is not a big deal. I'm going to the beach and I'm going to do beer stands. I'm going to drink out of a keg on a beach. No, not anymore. And I give Governor Sisolak, who I've interviewed and I've introduced. I introduced him when the Raiders had the name change and he came up and spoke. And I give the governor credit for what he did here. Even though it's hard times as we speak. So we're going to have Bill Foley come up here momentarily, the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, to talk about what they're going to do in town to relieve some of the financial stress that is going on. And a lot of our listeners have that financial stress. I can understand what's happening if you have multiple jobs. See, one thing when you have two jobs or three in this town, it's because you need all of that income to support your lifestyle. If you take away one job or, God forbid, you're unemployed and you have two more, or you have a partner that works, when everybody loses their job at once or is thinking about it and has that type of anxiety, we feel for everyone. And that's why we're blessed to be on the air to take you away from that. I'm going to mention it. We're going to talk about it. But we're going to try to stick to sports and do that a bunch coming up here. Because next week, it's going to be a little different. The way I predicted exactly what would happen. The NFL would stay open for business because they want to conduct their off-season business. Their off-season, their business was all technology. Skyping, talking on conference calls, trying to find a way to, you know, keep their business running in the off-season with free agency. And the NFL hit it out of the park. It was incredible what they did. Now it's going to shut down. Because players are not going to be able to sign on the dotted line. They're going to have to do it over computers. They're going to have to do it with technology. And then eventually, when the facilities open up, then you'll see a flood of players go to their facility and take photos and have pictures with the head coach and do all that. One of my favorite things, working for the Raiders 21 seasons, when I lived up there, or when I was happy to be, I've been up there on Tuesdays for 8 years. I flew up every Tuesday, and I would go up there, and I'd land at 8 in the morning, and then I would be back on a noon flight to come home. And there were a couple of times I'd be in the building when a player was signed, and they had a press conference. Or the moment where Al Davis broke out the video projector and the Lane Kiffin firing, I was there. And it just happened to be the day I was in the building. But what I can share with you about the Raider facility, not the new one here, but up in Oakland, it's vibrant. There are scouts, there are coaches, there are the business staff all walking through that building all the time. You can't do that now. because of what's happening with social distancing. So there's a lot of changes going on with football teams. So I think what's going to happen is Brady's going to announce tonight on social media that he's signed and he's in, or he's going to wait till tomorrow. Usually you don't want to wait on a Friday if you have an ego, because that's called the news dump. On Friday, people are going into the weekend, but now everybody's home for the weekend. So maybe Tom Brady will do it on Saturday or Sunday, and we'll talk about it on Monday, but we'll have a couple of days to do that. The Vegas Golden Knights pledged a minimum of $500,000 to assist VGK part-time game day employees and arena hourly on-call staff for the regular season for the games missed potentially. The owner, Bill Foley, kind enough to join us. Mr. Foley, I thank you so much for your time. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, JT. How about you?
Really good. A lot of people are excited to hear this news. Tell me about how the organization, yourself, and the players came together on this decision.
Well, we've been working on it for a couple of weeks. A lot of other teams have made earlier announcements, and we wanted to make sure we had it right. So we worked with a number of the players, and of course, Marc-Andre Fleury really stepped up. He's such a quality guy. My admiration for him just grows every day. But what we wanted to make sure of was that not just our own staff, but arena employees, part-time staff, restaurant employees, other concession employees, ushers, and so on, that they were paid for the shifts they missed for these four games, assuming that we don't play them or they're actually canceled. And we'll know that, you know, sometime in the next 30 days. But what we didn't want to do was send the money to some of the larger employers that are involved with T-Mobile or the concession. We want to give it directly to the individuals. And so that was why it took us a little longer to craft our response. But we're going to take care of all these people, whether they're our employees or not, because they're part of our fan base. And so a lot of them are our biggest fans. They're there every night helping people. And then, you know, I know so many of them. You know, I go to every home game, and I hang out with the team after the game, and, you know, obviously meet quite a few people after the game. So I thought it was something good for us to do. It wasn't to get a bunch of accolades. It was really to take care of people. That was the long and short of it.
Bill Foley's our guest. I've seen that. I've seen you interact with fans and employees and your staff. This was really important to you because of the relationships you built long before you became the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights. That connection with the fans now, and especially the people that work around you, you really care about them.
Absolutely. So we're not doing it for PR. We're doing it because we're part of Vegas. We were Las Vegas' first major league professional team. We were born and raised in Las Vegas. We had the tragedy on October 1st, and again, the players really stepped up and helped heal the community. And we're completely intertwined with Las Vegas and the residents of Las Vegas. So anything we can do to further that and to make sure that people know that we really care, that's what we're all about. It's real simple.
Bill Foley joins us. For your education from the United States Military Academy, the businesses you own before the Vegas Golden Knights, you're in a leadership role like you haven't been in before with the coronavirus. How are you leading from your place now with so many people looking up to you?
Well, we're asking people to be careful. Stay in small groups. Don't panic. There's a big run on toilet paper. Well, the United States has the capacity to make a lot of toilet paper. we're going to be okay with that. And we're also the largest food producer in the world, so we're going to have food. So we just have to really hunker down, not panic, be considerate, and separate ourselves. It's going to be difficult, but for the next 30 days or so, we just have to see if we can't get this virus over the bell curve and working down the backside. So we're getting a lot of cases that are reported. Frankly, I believe a lot of these cases were in the community anyway, and we're now just testing for them. But we're going to have more cases. But if we can just be calm, cool, and collected, you know, we'll get through this just fine.
Bill Foley is our guest, owner of the Vegas Golden Knights. You mentioned 1 October, and now the virus here, and you have a very young franchise. Your franchise has seen a lot, and Vegas has seen a lot since you took over here and this team was introduced here. Not the typical start for a franchise, but you're in this together with all of your other NHL partners who are going through it around North America.
We are. We are in it together, but we feel we have so much support in Las Vegas, and we feel such a, we're such a part of the community that that helps the team, and I really believe that we're helping Las Vegas and helping Las Vegas stay together. So I'm proud of our guys, you know, and Flower that made the contribution. A lot of other guys are making contributions as well. We just didn't want to detail everybody. And of course, we're doing our part from the team standpoint.
Mr. Foley, I wanted to ask you for a few moments about the team. And with Gerard Gallant and the move over to Peter DeBoer and then some of the moves at the trade deadline here, how you, with your leadership and then your executives, decided that they were going to make such big moves to make a run to the Cup. It's been very exciting here for the fans. When the sport comes back, hopefully it comes back for the postseason and some regular season games, how excited are you for this roster and the new coaching staff?
I'm really excited. I really feel Turk is a great guy, but we just felt like we needed to move a different direction. And so, you know, George and Kelly did that in mid-January. And Pete's been everything I thought he would be. He's a high-quality individual, very intelligent. And then we knew we had a couple of gaps on the team. We really knew we needed another top 12 forward. We were working on the goalie position because we felt like Flower needed to get a break once in a while. And frankly, we really were convinced that we needed to have another top four defenseman. And so we went out and we got Martinez, you know, on the Tuesday before the deadline. And then other things fell in our lap really on that Monday morning. And I've gotten a chance to speak to Robin Leonard a few times and spend some time with him. He's a quality guy and he's very smart. So I'm excited to have him with us. I'm excited to have Cousins with us. He's Nick's another high quality guy. These guys are all character people, which is what our team's all about. And Martinez is in the same, right out of the same cloth. So I'm not going to say we have the best team in the NHL, but I believe we have the most dangerous team in the NHL. We're a really good team, and we'll take this time off to get a couple of guys that got hurt, you know, later in the season. So if we get in the playoffs in sometime in May, the fans for the first time may be able to get to see, whether in person or on TV, the Golden Knights squad healthy and playing, which they've never seen in our 3-year history. We've never had everybody healthy. So I'm pretty excited about it. Just got to beat this virus so we can get back to work.
Yeah, Mr. Foley, a lot of people, no one questions your passion to win, but a lot of listeners to this show and callers have asked me, you know, how much of a role did you have to play in all these decisions? How fired up were you to say, we got to win, we got to turn this around, and then let your executives go out and make these moves? Can you tell the fans about the passion to win the Cup after getting so close in the inaugural season?
I mean, I've got a lot of passionate guys in the hockey side, starting with Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee, and you know our offices are right next to each other, so we see each other every day, and we talk every day, and we talk about the future is now, and the future is now. We want to win now, and George McPhee wants to win now just as much as I do. So I have my hand in it. I don't make the calls on who we get specifically or how we do it, but I'm there to support them, support the decision-making process and back it up. So I'm really happy about the moves we made. We've got a team that Las Vegas can really be proud of.
I agree. Last question in regards to the $500,000. A lot of fans, a lot of the workers are going to want to know, you have SBE, Levy, MGM, et cetera. With the money being distributed, should we keep an eye on the website, what you're going to be putting out PR-wise, so everybody can keep track of this and follow up and know when the timeline is going to go forward?
Yeah, absolutely. So first we'll see if the games are actually canceled. If they to get played, obviously, then people will be working. As I said, we wanted to make sure that we dealt with this ourselves directly to the individuals that are working. We want them to get the money from us. We don't want it going through a third party, and then they put some in a fund, and they, you know, this person wasn't really there, hasn't been there, they don't get the money. So we're making the decision, and we know who the people are. We're just getting our lists together, and it'll be, you know, we'll know sometime in the next 30, 45 days exactly what the schedule's going to be.
Mr. Foley, thank you. We're honored to be a proud partner here at Lotus with you. You're a tremendous leader. We're fortunate enough to have you, your staff, and your team in this town through the good times and through these tough times like now. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks, JT. It's good talking to you.
Great talking to you. There he is, Bill Foley, the owner of your Vegas Golden Knights. So this is a big deal for us here to get that interview to you. $500,000. Wanted to make sure at the end he told you about how that would be distributed in the coming weeks or months here, but the commitment was made. And I could spend a lot of time talking about Marc-Andre Fleury. I do. I said that, you know, it wasn't right for this interview, but to get him that statue in front, start understanding the importance of this future Hall of Fame goaltender and everything that he's done and how important he is in this community and the leadership of Mr. Foley and what he's done to change this town with professional sports and the facility and what they're doing in Henderson and all of his other charitable endeavors. He's legit, and we're fortunate to have him here in town, especially during this difficult time where leadership is going to be really important. When we come back, we got a lot of people to talk to. That was a nice long stretch. Brian Billick, I appreciate that, and the owner of your Vegas Golden Knights, Bill Foley, will join us. Nick Holden from BGK at the top of the hour. Scott Baer will join us. And Mr. Michael Lee, what a column he has out today about Michael Jordan when he came out of retirement 25 years ago to the day. You don't want to miss that.
When Kobe Bryant died, a piece of me died. And as I look in this arena and across the globe, a piece of you died. Or else you wouldn't be here. Those are the memories that we have to live with and we learn from. I promise you, from this day forward, I will live with the memories of knowing that I had a little brother that I tried to help in every way I could.
Michael Jordan at Kobe's memorial. JT, back with you. I'm back 25 years later. Michael Jordan's return still electrifies. An unbelievable piece of journalism released today by our guest, Michael Lee, who joins us. Michael, good to talk to you. And in advance, a great column. This is fantastic. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it was a fun story to report. I feel like we've heard just about every Jordan story possible. But fortunately, we were able to speak to some of his former teammates and some other guys. And it gets some new angles and some new takes to it. So it was pretty good story, fun story to tell.
Yeah, what I like about it, before we get into the meat of it, is you're working on content at this time as the NBA shut down. So what has that been like for you, one of the premier writers in the NBA, to start thinking outside the box and with David to put this column together? Where did the idea come from?
Well, fortunately, we were, this was something that we were looking ahead to, you know, before all of this stuff came down with the coronavirus. So it was an easy story to pursue. It was an easy story to kind of go after with all this other stuff going on, because it just gave you a different distraction than having to think of how to tell the story of how people are dealing with the coronavirus and their own fears with that. So I think the timing of it, the fact that it is actual 25th anniversary of his first game back, you know, against the Indiana Pacers on that Sunday afternoon, it gave us something to focus on. Now the challenge is, when we're past all these anniversary points and have to really start, you know, chronicling something that we've never seen before, a really truly unprecedented event that's rocked the sports world and everything more than we've ever imagined.
So in the column, let's talk about first his decision to leave before it was to come back. Looking back on that, what were you impressed with? What were you surprised about as Michael Jordan stepped away from the game originally?
Well, obviously, I just think a lot of people just said he was just sort of mentally and physically fried. You know, when you compete at such a high level, I mean, you know, he won 3 straight championships, but he also made 5 straight trips to the conference finals. A lot of people don't realize that. And that's a mental grind on you. And especially when you think about the beating that the Pistons gave him, you know, those first 2 times they made it to the conference finals. You know, to go through that and then to win three straight championships and to be the type of intense competitor that he was, and then to obviously lose his father, you know, around that same time. I just think that he just didn't have enough in him to sort of commit to basketball at that time. But, you know, sort of an interesting thing that sort of led him back to basketball was a labor dispute in baseball that, you know, wiped out the, you know, half of the season in 94. And it's about to, you know, take out, you know, the start of the 95 season. And he had nothing to do, but he had all these competitive juices flowing. He had all this energy and all this, you know, he needed something to focus on. And it took him right back to his true love, which is basketball. And I think his fans of the game, we actually owe a debt of gratitude to the baseball players for striking, because it it opened the door for Jordan to come back and bring his dominance back to the NBA.
Michael Lee's our guest. I want to stay with the passing of his father and how unfortunate that was, especially the circumstances surrounding it. You're a son and your father gets killed that way, and you look back at life, and that's a lot on his mind. And you mentioned those conference finals. As a Knicks fan, I put my life into that back in the day, and some of the battles that we saw back then. I remember how much Jordan put into the game. How much pressure was he getting from his family or David Stern, advertisers, partners to come back because he was such an important brand?
I don't believe he had any pressure to come back. I don't think anybody, I mean, I think people definitely wanted him to come back because he was sorely missed and the game was struggling to find somebody to sort of fill that void as the ambassador of the game and carrying the mantle for the entire league. I just think that, you know, he was getting antsy and, you know, he was kind of throughout that process, he was away from the game. He still was checking in with his teammates and see how they were doing. And B.J. Armstrong told me this great story about how he would call and ask about different players that they had faced. And he was really interested in Latrell Sprewell because he made first-team All-NBA the first year Jordan was out. And so he was just interested in knowing what his go-to moves were and knowing what guys did after three dribbles and all these type of questions that you wouldn't ask unless you were thinking about probably guarding these guys again if it wasn't in your mind. And I think that he was sort of planting little crumbs, you know, throughout the, you know, his before he came back. And eventually, you know, created this trail to where when you got there, you're like, oh, snap, we're here. He's back.
25 years ago, Michael Jordan and the return, David Falk said, as you tweeted, it was serving notice to the rest of the league. The holiday is over. Get ready. Back to the game. Back to torment you. What'd you learn about the league while Jordan was away and what they were thinking when they knew the greatest player of that era was coming back?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because, you know, he had been gone for so long and he had, you know, trained his body to basically be a baseball player. You know, he put on all this weight, all this muscle. So when he came back, he obviously wasn't Michael Jordan. Mentally, he was there, but physically, he wasn't. And I think in that 95 year, I think everyone's felt that this was their opportunity to kind of get him, you know, before, you know, he got himself fully back. And so there was an opening there. And obviously, the Orlando Magic defeated the Bulls in the second round that year. That was the last time Jordan's Bulls would lose in the playoffs. But I think that was just an opportunity, you know, like in game one of that series against the Magic, you know, Nick Anderson came back, had that famous steal. Then afterward, it was like, you know, he was wearing number 45. He's like, number 45 ain't number 23. He's like, I wouldn't have been able to do that to number 23. And I think that, you know, the league knew that there was a window there where they could get their championships. You know, because Jordan just wasn't all the way back. But the next 3 years, you know, he used that, the fuel from, you know, failure to basically unleash a complete tirade over the league the next 3 years. They won 72 games in the next season. They won 69 the next season. And then, you know, they kind of were running on fumes that last year. And Pippen missed a lot of games in 98. And they completed another three-peat, which just shows you just the amount of commitment he had to not just come back, but to make sure that he was still ascending. You know, I think when he came back, you know, in 95, he was in a unique position because he was being held to a standard that he had set of being Michael Jordan, you know, being the greatest. And he sort of had to live up to that level of play. And throughout his career, he had always just been playing at a level that was Jordan-esque, right? Yeah. So he had to come back and match that level. Which was difficult for him. And I think that, you know, hearing the comments and hearing the whispers that he had lost a step sort of pushed him to turn into another gear.
What I love about this is I'm looking at the 95-96 season, 96-97, 97-98, three championships, and he played in 82 games. Started and played in them all. 37.7 minutes, 37.9, 38.8. Do you believe in that run coming off the 93-94 season where he didn't play? You talked about the comeback in this great athletic piece. I think that's a huge part of his legacy, that he retired, he missed this chunk, but when he was there to play all those games and all those minutes and back it up with championships, that's the legacy of Jordan and how great of a competitor he was.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that B.J. Armstrong told me that, you know, in our conversation that stuck out with me is he said the one thing that Jordan always said is the score is always 0-0. Mm-hmm. And that just sort of gave you the whole mindset of how he approached the game, where he could never get, you know, complacent. He could never, you know, start, you know, slacking off, because for him, the score is always 0-0. So each possession mattered, and he had to win every possession. Defensively, he had to shut his guy down so that he wouldn't score, so it could stay 0-0. And he had to go on the other end and make sure that he scored so that, you know, he could maintain that level of competitiveness. And I think that's sort of what you need when you're at that level of greatness, because, you know, excellence, you know, requires vigilance. And I think that's the way Jordan went about doing his business. He wasn't going to be settling for anything. And if he wound up coming up short, best believe he's going to come back to make sure that you knew that he was still the best to do it.
What was the biggest takeaway, you and David Aldridge, with the column that you were most proud of, you uncovered, and you're able to bring to your audience?
Well, I don't want to give the whole story away, but BJ gave me a pretty good anecdote about the moment that he sort of got a hint that Jordan was going to come back. I'll let people read that for themselves. I don't want to give it away, but I do want to say that when he told me this story, I was like, wow. And he's like, yeah, I haven't really shared that with anybody before, but I encourage everybody to give it a read and check it out, because, like I said, we've heard so many stories about Jordan being a ruthless competitor. But it's always good to have, you know, a player or somebody who he knew to kind of give you some more details into that.
Lastly, outside of the column, what Adam Silver's been doing in this leadership role, you've been noticing, I've been noticing, he's really talking about coming back more than anybody. Is that a good look? Because I think it is. It's we need leaders to be encouraging other people that sports is coming back. I'm trying to do that in my role on the radio. And every time I hear a bite from Adam Silver, he's talking about 30 days, reevaluating the process, what it will take, maybe a charity all-star game. I like the way Silver is leading.
I do, too. I mean, I appreciate his optimism, but I also don't. And I think it's good that you have some level of optimism, but I think you have to kind of counter that with the reality that, you know, the season might be over. And I think that's not something that he wants to accept, and I'm glad that he's going to try to do whatever he can. And I think that's good for fans to know that the league's going to do whatever it can to make sure that we continue to carry out this season, because there's been a lot of great storylines, a lot of great things have been happening this year that you would hate to see it just come to an abrupt end. But the reality is that lives are at stake, and that we got to make sure that we're around for a 2021 season, you know, and I think that's the primary objective. The primary goal is to protect everyone and to make sure that we put safety above profits, because I think we're all going to be suffering a lot financially during this period. But and we definitely need some entertainment angles to get our mind off of it. But I think the main thing is making sure that we're around to be entertained when it comes.
This is fantastic work for you and David. Thanks for making a few minutes. We really appreciate it, Michael.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. Mr. Michael Lee, follow him at Mr. Michael Lee. Nick Holden of the Vegas Golden Knights is going to join us next. Stick around for that.